Welcome to the Crisis Point podcast, where, like G.K. Chesterton, we discuss nothing except for politics and religion because, well, there's nothing else to discuss. I am your host, Michael Warren Davis, the editor of Crisis Magazine, and as always, I am joined by Philip F. Lawler, the director of the Center for the Restoration of Christian Culture at the Thomas More College of Liberal Arts, and I thank you all for joining us. This week's headline is the annual fall meeting of the USCCB, which coming in the wake of the McCarrick report has made for some interesting reading. So Phil, what are you gathering from this meeting so far?
Well, I suppose the most interesting thing to me is what looks like a significant split in the conference. To look at it another way, the big headline is the announcement by Archbishop Gomez, the president of the Bishops Conference, that he's putting together a special committee to tackle the problem that the U.S. bishops face in having a Catholic president who is at odds with the church on important issues regarding the dignity of human life.
That came as a surprise to me.
It's a sort of strong statement. I mean, relatively speaking, I have to say, I have to ask myself, why did it take so long?
Right.
But having said that, here it is. And there was a good deal of resistance, I think, within the ranks from more liberal bishops, more resistance to taking a stand that looks to be hostile, in conflict at least, with Biden, and that split is revealing.
Every 4 years, the bishops obviously have to make some preparations for a new administration, or every 8 years if there's a re-election, I should say. So this isn't totally unprecedented, but I would like to read Archbishop Gomez's statement, which was, I thought, refreshingly straightforward. So he said that Joe Biden, quote, gives us reason to believe that he will support policies that are against some fundamental values that we hold dear as Catholics. These policies include the repeal of the Hyde Amendment and the preservation of Roe versus Wade. Both of these policies undermine our preeminent priority of the elimination of abortion. These policies pose a serious threat to the common good, whether any politician supports them. Whenever any politician supports them. We have long opposed these policies strongly, and we will continue to do so. But when politicians who profess the Catholic faith support them, there are additional problems. Among other things, it creates confusion among the faithful about what the Church actually teaches on these questions. End quote. I've noticed that Archbishop Gomez, twice in this statement and once elsewhere, has assiduously refused to refer to Joe Biden as a Catholic. He refers to him as a person or a politician who professes the Catholic faith, which Cardinal Newman would say is basically equivocal to someone saying, you know, I'm a Tory because my parents were Tories. I was raised a Tory. So Archbishop Gomez has had a very difficult election cycle. There was that statement that was quote unquote leaked saying that he was supporting Joe Biden because he found Trump was mean. And that was obviously, he obviously came out and said, I said no such thing. That was just something that someone on the internet made up. And I think that it may have alerted him to the way that the bishops are perceived. And hopefully this will be a moment of reckoning where they do realize that, that Joe Biden is not only has the potential to mislead Catholics, but also that he's the product of a Catholic culture that, he didn't invent the idea of, you know, being quote unquote personally opposed to abortion, but not wanting to impose those views on others. He's a product of that culture. And so in that sense, Biden is more a symptom of a very serious illness that predates him. And regardless of whether the election results are overturned or not, that disease is with us. It's not going to go away just by waving the wand.
Right. It was a strong statement from Archbishop Gomez, and I guess a little bit of a surprise to me because he had earlier gone out of his way to salute Biden as the president-elect and say, we're looking forward to working with him. And that was a statement he didn't have to make. I mean, Biden at that point and to this day was not and is not the president-elect. You could say he's presumptive president-elect. I understand why the bishops would want to make plans for his administration, but it's not over yet. And there's no reason to make a statement until it is over. So I was disappointed in that statement from Archbishop Gomez. And I welcome this one, which shows much more of a willingness to confront somebody who has strayed very far from the path.
I'm very in favor of what St. Paul says about when one of your brothers strays from the path, you who are spiritual, I think rebuke him in a spirit of gentleness or something like that. So I understand wanting to have a gentle hand when dealing with these issues. I have a feeling that Archbishop Gomez's first statement was the result of he's very proactive, and I have a feeling that he was wanting to get in the conversation to start building that momentum, making the bishop's opinions heard. It was very easy to misconstrue. I think it was a misconstruction. I could be wrong, but I think it was very easy to misconstrue his statement as being sort of pro Biden. The bit about professing the Catholic faith is what made me ease my foot off the gas on that one. But again, we see here the same. So he seems to be correcting his course and saying, you know, we do want to work with the president of the United States, regardless of who the president of the United States is. We obviously want the church to have her say. We want to have an influence in the public discourse. But we're certainly not letting Joe Biden off the hook just because he calls himself a Catholic. He advances policies that contradict the most fundamental principles, not only of the Catholic philosophy of life, but also of Catholic social teaching. He calls eliminating abortion, he calls the preeminent priority of Catholics, and that certainly in this country that's true. And he seems to go out of his way to say, you know, just because you call yourself a Catholic, Mr. Biden, we certainly aren't going to let you off the hook. If anything, we're going to be much harder on you for that fact, as they should be, for sure. So, right. I
think if there's something of a confrontational attitude in this statement, there should be, because Biden has gone out of his way essentially to say that he's going to attack the Catholic Church. I mean, yes, he's going to haul the Little Sisters of the Poor back before the Supreme Court if he can. He's welcoming the endorsement from Planned Parenthood. It isn't a question here of someone who finds himself at odds with church teaching and is surprised. Oh, gee, I didn't know that. Yeah. That's not the case here. He's been hearing this for years and years now, and his positions on the key moral issues have only been getting more extreme, and his hostility to Catholic interests have only been getting more pronounced. So if this is not, I don't think, an appropriate time to say, oh, we're going to work very carefully with you, we know we're friends, let's just work out a few little details. No, we have a real problem on our hands here.
If I have a great deal of admiration for Father James Altman, who we had on the podcast a couple of months ago, and I admire him taking a very strong public stand. I understand if bishops don't feel that that's the correct approach to take, especially given that Biden is himself a Catholic, and I would think that the proper Christian attitude is to say, not only are we concerned about the laymen who vote for, or rather, we're not only concerned about the unborn who die in abortions, which we certainly must be, but we're also concerned for the mothers. We're also concerned for the people who are putting their own mortal soul in peril by supporting pro-death candidates, and we are even concerned about Joe Biden himself. And the bishops have to bear in mind that the bishops are Biden, there are pastors, which means that they're Biden's pastors as well. And so they have to judge that situation on its own, and they have to choose what the correct course is. And if it isn't coming out and saying everyone who votes for Biden is going to hell and making a big public statement, we may or may not agree with them. But I hope that this statement is a promise that they will be addressing him very seriously. Again, it doesn't have to be public. We would like to know that it happens, certainly, but they don't, they don't have to be ganging up on him on Twitter. But I do hope that there is some very clear, very public witness by the bishops. I saw from the a report from Catholic News Agency that that the Committee on Doctrine, which is sort of the nearest thing that America has to an Inquisition, the bishops have just elected Bishop Daniel Flores of Brownsville, who is solidly Orthodox, loves Thomas Aquinas and Lord of the Rings, very, very well liked by the Latin Mass community in his diocese, and I would love to see Bishop Flores come out and say this: the position of the church is that you pro-abortion politicians must not receive Holy Communion, and we expect all bishops to uphold that in their own diocese, because the problem is only getting worse. The problem of Catholics feeling like they can flaunt this teaching that is at the heart of what it means to be a Catholic in the world is to respect the inherent dignity and value of every human life. So when are the bishops going to make a stand? I hope that this is sort of the first shot across the bow, letting the Catholic Democrats know that they're coming for them.
It's also
in the most pastoral way possible.
It is, as I said, a sign of a split within the conference, and you could almost say a shot across the bow of some of the other bishops, because there's a backstory here, isn't there? That there are bishops, there are Catholic priests who were rooting hard for Biden, and who were extremely, extremely hostile to President Trump.
Mm.
And some of them probably have their noses out of joint because there wasn't a comparably hard-hitting statement when Trump was elected.
Mm-hmm.
And the complaint is, well, look, Trump is against Catholic teaching on immigration. And I think there are two things wrong with that. First of all, Catholic teaching on immigration is not nearly as authoritative as Catholic teaching on the dignity of life. Immigration issues are prudential issues, and nobody is calling for the murder of immigrants the way some people are calling for the murder of unborn babies.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. The second thing, which Archbishop Gomez does bring up clearly, is Trump isn't a Catholic. So even if he were at odds with Catholic teaching, it wouldn't be an occasion for scandal the way it is with Biden and abortion and other issues.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. I don't like to use this word out loud, but Supich, I feel like we have to at least touch briefly on his intervention. So on the first day of this meeting, Cardinal Supich gave an intervention, which is a fancy word for a speech, I guess, addressing his brother bishops. And he essentially said that the reason that McCarrick was allowed to get away for 40 plus years with trying to seduce his seminarians and whatnot is because of a lack of collegiality among the bishops, which is not only wicked, but it's very, very stupid. It's completely inane. It's like saying my car won't start because I didn't have breakfast. It's not even related. As problematic as the concept of synodality is, this has absolutely nothing to do with that whatsoever. It was just this weird, bold-faced effort to advance his little agenda. I really hope that he didn't succeed in doing anything except for embarrassing himself, because I can't see how he thought that was going to resonate with anyone.
I agree with you. There are a few buzzwords that are being tossed around with regard to the McCarrick report and with regard to nearly everything else involved with the business of the Catholic Church. Synodality and clericalism is the other one.
Yeah, right.
There were a lot of people who wanted us to understand that the problem that allowed for McCarrick's rise was clericalism. It's a buzzword.
Yeah.
And it deflects attention from the real problem, which is that there is a powerful, influential bloc. McCarrick was a very powerful member of that bloc. And by the way, Cardinal Supich is now a powerful member of that bloc. And that's the problem that we have to address.
So I really hate the word clericalism, because I think part of the reason that we're in this problem to begin with is because we have debased the role of the clergy too much, and the church has been democratized already far too much. But the solution that most of the bishops have come to is that the main problem with the old way of doing things was that you had all these restrictions in place, most notably the Dallas Charter, but the Dallas Charter didn't really have any oversight for bishops, and bishops were expected to police each other, which in theory is fine. But there was a hole in that, obviously, because McCarrick got away, the bishops weren't able to successfully police each other. And so there has been a push for more clerical, you know, sort of lower orders of clergy, and even some laymen to have more oversight over the bishops. If I can extract any sense from Cardinal Supich's statement about collegiality, it's that he wants to go back to the old way where the bishops police each other. Because the problem, it seems to me, was that there again, there was too much collegiality. There was too much power concentrated at the collegial level. There wasn't enough formal structures to redress things like abuse. Am I wrong about that, Phil?
I don't think you're wrong, but I don't think that the problem came because of the structures or the policies or the procedures. I think it came because of the personnel. Hmm. Canon law was sufficient to address the problem of somebody like McCarrick, just as canon law was sufficient to address the problem of abusive priests back before the Dallas Charter. The problem was that the people who should have been enforcing the policies didn't. The problem was that the people who should have been reporting to the Vatican about McCarrick's misbehavior, they did report, and what they reported was false. Yeah. And they did that knowingly. That's the problem. And I don't see how a different set of procedures would help if you have people who are willing to tell lies to support their friends.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I do want to make one more comment about the USCCB's appointments, because it caught my eye, and it actually it heartened me a little bit. I know that you probably have, you being the audience, and possibly you too, Phil, have mixed feelings about Timothy Cardinal Dolan. But I think it's fair to say that he's, you know, having spent a couple of years sort of in the wilderness, you know, his popularity fading a bit, he's written a series of op-eds in the Wall Street Journal over the last couple of years, you know, condemning the Democrats, condemning the rioters who were destroying politically incorrect statuary and things like that. And then he surprised everyone by offering the opening prayer at the 2020 Republican National Convention. And he opened his prayer, "Let us pray. And pray we must, as grateful citizens of a country we boldly claim to be one nation under God. Pray we must, praising the Lord for a country where freedom of religion is so cherished." And so Cardinal Dolan became, I would say, the senior most cleric to sort of align with the Trump administration, and putting freedom of religion in the forefront was a very bold move, obviously, because there's very little question in the eyes of most Catholics, rather in the mind of most Catholics, which side of the political divide cares more about religious freedom. And then we wake up the other day and we find that Cardinal Dolan has been appointed the chairman for the Committee on Religious Liberty. Something, talk is cheap, obviously, but this is another move that did make me think that maybe the bishops are getting it. If they didn't get it before, maybe they're coming around.
I hope that's the right interpretation. Another way to look at it is he's in New York, and New York is where all the talking heads are. It's the media capital of the world.
True.
And we need a strong voice in New York to talk about religious freedom, because it's a very important issue right now, and it's going to become a much more important issue after the inauguration, if indeed Biden is inaugurated, because there's going to be an assault on the religious freedom of the Catholic Church, and we need to organize resistance. And in that respect, it's great that we have the chairman of the Bishops' Committee in New York rather than, you know, somewhere in the middle of the country where there aren't network TV crews always on call.
That's true. Yeah, that's fair enough. I'm just going to do a quick rundown of some of the other appointments, because I found them very interesting. So we have the Committee on Religious Education, Bishop Daly of Spokane. He became briefly a sort of a folk hero among conservative Catholics, because it was under his diocese that that goofy Catholic Charities executive came out and called the Black Lives Matter movement brilliant, and called himself a racist and claimed that the Catholic Church was a racist. Bishop Daly is the one that came out and said not only is he wrong about the church, but Black Lives Matter is a very disturbing movement. Their principles are in contradiction with the Catholic faith. Their violence is unacceptable, et cetera, et cetera. So if the bishops' conference was dominated by leftists, he would have been a persona non grata. But he was given a little boost, which I was again found quite heartening. Any thoughts about that?
No, I just echo what you said. I think you're right on there. This conference is divided, but it's a much more conservative conference overall than it has been in the past.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which one was it? It was the Pro-Life Committee 3 years ago, 2017. It was Archbishop Joseph Naumann of Kansas City in Kansas up against Cardinal Supich of Chicago. And this was when Supich was really the guy to watch. It was when he was first getting all these promotions. He was obviously the leader of the Francis Party and the bishops. And he got voted down by a significant margin. And his reputation really never recovered from that, because his brother bishops handed him a pretty strong rebuke, especially for a papal favorite in a country. You know, the United States has always been known for trying to be very obedient to the Holy Father. It's one of the less rebellious, more conservative provinces of the Catholic Church. And that was 3 years is a long time these days, but that was also, I thought, very heartening.
Right.
Committee on Communication, which is the bishop's media arm, Bishop Robert Breed of Boston, who I really quite like, actually. I'm sure that you know him, Phil. He's we went to the same prep school, so I can't really blame him for that. But he's going to be, if he isn't the next Archbishop of Boston or something to that effect, I think that he'll be another Robert Barron, sort of independent Catholic media apostolate type. National Collections Committee, Bishop James Wall of Gallup, who I hear nothing but really terrific things about. He instituted Ad Orientem worship at his cathedral. He lives a very, very quiet, modest life. He lives, from what I hear, basically in the ghetto, and very committed to works of penance and service of the poor, in addition to being a rock solid conservative. So whatever office he was promoted to, I think that would also bode well. Any final words, Phil?
No, I like that rundown. It gives me more hope. I had not paid enough attention to the committee chairs, and I hope your reading is correct, because that is more encouraging. You're giving me more encouragement than I've had out of bishops' meetings in many years.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I mean, read the whole article before. I don't want to. I've been accused a lot of bishop splaining lately, which I didn't know was a thing. But so I will. It's not all sunflowers and roses. So do read the article before you accuse me of bishopsplaining, please. But I actually came away rather impressed by the slate that they chose. So anyway, I'm afraid that that's probably all the time that we have for today. But until next time, I am Michael Warren Davis. He is Philip F. Lawler. And this is The Crisis Point. Thank you all so much for joining us, and God bless you.